Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Nick Lippis, and welcome to the Built for Trust podcast, where you get to hear from all the folks who are building and shaping AI enterprise infrastructure. Now, let's get right into it with our guests. How are you? So psyched.
Good.
To have
how
are
you doing? Yeah, it's very exciting. It's been a long time since I've seen you in person, right?
I know. Well, my God, in person, forget it. That has to be like, you know, maybe 5 years ago or so. You know, it's like, I think there was like one owner a long time ago that that you were able to make. But besides that, yeah, no, we haven't kind of been in 3D together.
Yeah. Excellent. Good. Where are you based out of these days now?
So I'm actually hanging out in Naples, Florida. My wife has really gotten to like, you know, Naples. And so she's kind of dragged me down here, you know, for the winter. So I've been hanging out, you know, down here, which I got to say, you know, it's like I was brought down, you know, kicking and screaming a little bit, you know.
Okay.
But like now it's like I'm here. It's like I get to exercise every day. I'm on my bike.
Nice.
You know, it's like,
Nice. You
know, I get to, you know, just work out in the morning and then I get my work, you know, in the afternoon and then, you know, maybe pool or beach in the afternoon or, you know, late afternoon. So, you know, life is good, you know, so she's
life
really,
is good.
She
life is good. Yeah, exactly. I'm in Silicon Valley now. So, yeah.
Yeah. So what are you doing in the Valley?
Yeah, I have to meet with a few startups that are in town. Then they had the GTC event and then, you know, the whole thing with NVIDIA and those type of things like that. So I had to attend that. Yeah. So great. Yeah.
Yeah. On fire, NVIDIA, you know, it's like, you know, it's so interesting too. Like you look at that, you know, their story, you know, it's like they are not only were like kind of first mover advantage, you know, but it's like now with the pace of acceleration, you know, of AI, like almost like no one can catch up to them, you know,
yeah,
it's like,
no,
unless they stumble, they can't execute, you know, there is like a huge backlog in GPUs, you know, from what I've heard is almost like 2 years, you know, so that opens up a huge opportunity for competition.
It does.
You know,
it
in
does,
the marketplace and the market needs competition, you know.
It does. Yeah. To innovate. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, to look to see where they came from a gaming and their strategy to evolve to where that, it's pretty impressive. And I was telling someone that I saw this, it was a cartoon that had, it said, you know, who's going to make money in AI? You know, like this, right? And the cartoon showed, you know, the 49er, 1849, where it said, here's the people digging for gold, right? And there were a few that made money, right? But the ones consistently making money were the ones selling the pots and the shovels and the pans, which is NVIDIA in a way with this, right? So it was such a good cartoon, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a great business model, and it's a great story. Yeah. You know, everyone's kind of, you know, digging for gold, then the only folks making the gold are the tool manufacturers,
the tool
in that model, you know, like, I don't know. I've started to like, you know, put together a model for the kind of the AI ecosystem and, you know, let me know if you agree with it, but I kind of view like four layers of this ecosystem that's developed. Mm-hmm. There's like the chip level, right? And clearly NVIDIA, you know, was in there, you know, AMD, Intel, you know, Mellanox and, you know, and others, you know, not Mellanox. Yeah, Mellanox, you know, kind of in that market.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the infrastructure piece, right? And that's, you know, that's GPUs, DPUs, BPUs, CPUs.
Yeah.
It's also storage. It's also networking. It's security.
Correct.
It's all the infrastructure, you know, pieces.
Right.
And then above that are all the kind of the frameworks, right? And those are kind of open sourced and those are commoditizing, you know, at a really rapid pace. And then on top of that are the applications like ChatGPT as an example, Gronk as like another, you know, example,
right.
You know, as well. So, you know, so those are the kind of four layers, you know, that I've kind of like starting to like focus on in this marketplace.
Okay.
NVIDIA clearly dominates the kind of the chip space and also the GPU space. But in the infrastructure, the rest of the infrastructure space, that's pretty much wide open, you know. So, so there's a lot of and there are a lot of companies and room in that marketplace. You know, the frameworks. I think that's kind of you know, like I said, that, I think that's commoditizing quick. And then the applications space is the space that's really kind of wide open as well, you know, and hopefully we'll see, sure, you know, thousands of companies and a couple of really big companies that kind of emerge out of that, out of that. So I don't know, that's,
yeah,
that's the way I've been, yeah, kind of, no, viewing the market.
Yeah, I think it's a, I think it's a good layering it from that perspective. Kind of what I do is I, as you know, I focus a lot on the telco and some really large enterprises, but I try to divert the discussion initially to get clarity. So when a CEO or board, Nick, asks me like, hey, what are your thoughts on AI? I literally take a step back and say, you're asking me the wrong question, right? Mm-hmm. The question should be, these are the challenges or these are the opportunities we want to go after. What technology enables me to get there? Whether it's, mm-hmm, AI or automation and that type of stuff, right? Because so many times we try to force feed that technology into that. And then when we get to the point that, yeah, there is an opportunity for AI, right? We kind of then segment it into two areas. Is either AI for service or AI for infrastructure, which is related to using AI to optimize the environment, to optimize the customer experience or optimize the security, right? But then there's the other part of infrastructure for AI, which is that, right? Yeah. And I think too many people are confusing the two, yeah, and totally two different types of my, it isn't just AI for networking. It's like you said, yeah, storage capacity, compute, all those are needed in that area for that side of it. And those require two different types of discussion, right? So once we get that clarity, then we're able to map to see, okay, this is the direction you want to go in, or a combo to have something more sustainable in the discussion there.
Yeah, I think that's more, that's a, you know, kind of extremely rational, you know, kind of line of thinking, you know, and process, you know, there. Because I think, you know, a couple of thoughts that kind of spins off, you know, one is that we're kind of viewing like two different markets, right? And I think you alluded to that, right? So there's kind of AI infrastructure to support AI workloads, right? And that's right, like, you know, that's one. And the hyperscale companies are all over that, you know, right now.
Yeah, they are all over.
And also some like in the financials, there's a whole bunch of financials that are, you know, are in that same, are in the same boat. There's also just how AI is now permeating and becoming embedded into the infrastructure to deliver its own value. Right. You know, so like, you know, I know you're going to be hosting a session at ONU on kind of like, you know, on routing and what happens with routing as we start to, as AI starts to become, you know, embedded, you know, into our kind of protocol stacks. There's a lot of discussion around security, you know, as well, like Tom Gillis is going to do a keynote and talking about a product, you know, it's like you and I had these Chinese walls that you can never, you know, try to like, you know, cross, you know, but it's like, so there's kind of going to be a really interesting product, you know, there, you know, that'll come out. But I think, so I view these two different markets, right? There's AI infrastructure for AI workloads. And then there is also infrastructure for any kind of workload, but like, yeah, yeah, but AI is permeating, you know, those, and those two might meet at some point in time, right?
That's correct. And that's the way I position it. Yeah, correct. Right. Correct. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Right. Because realize, Nick, I have a slide. I should send it to you one time from 85, 85, which is my neural network, right? Right. And that was if then, or statements, right? If then, but that was my neural network. So we've been doing AI for a long time, right? But now we're seeing, you know, it's great to see that I get to live to see at least some of the fruits of some of that early work take into effect. I'm almost jealous that I'm not going to see where it's going to be 30 years from now. I take more of the positive view than the negative view. You know, when people ask me like, you know, are you concerned about AI, right? Mm-hmm. Are you worried about it? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I said, the reason we have lights is because of electricity. The reason we have this is because of electricity, right? Realize if you mess with electricity the wrong way, it can hurt you. It can do some serious damage, right? But yet it didn't stop us for creating all this level of innovation, right? So I think when we look at it that way to say, electricity could be used to kill you in some cases or really do damage, I see AI in a similar type concept. I tend to look at more as the glass full, right? Maybe yeah. because I'm an engineer, you know, I always look at it as the glass is never empty, it's full. It's got something in it. I think AI is a similar route to electricity or other examples like that there.
Yeah, my thinking is totally aligned with yours, you know, on that, Ray. It's like, I tend to be a technologist optimist, and I always look into the good, you know, here. Of what, because like actually that's been our history. Like, you know, in every major, you know, kind of transition, you know, whether that was like, you know, from kind of mainframes into PCs to the internet, you know, evolution, like we never really spent that much time thinking about kind of downside, you know, right. of those transitions. This is the only one that we really are spending a good amount of time, you know, and I think it's clearly warranted. Actually, I think it's really healthy, you know, to have those discussions. I tend to agree with you. You know, it's like I usually to a fault would kind of look towards the positive, you know.
Same here.
Being Pollyannish, you know, but also like I just see more good than I see, you know, bad. There's same always here. Bad actors, you know.
Yeah, there's always going to be bad actors. Always in any situations, you're going to have those bad actors. But I always try to look at the good. Like you see some of the stuff going on in medicine, and I mean healthcare. It's just amazing some of the work that's going on in that area. So absolutely,
the rate of change that we're about to like go through is just, you know, amazing. Like over the last 8 years, there's been like about 1,000-fold increase in compute, you know, power. You know, like that kind of blows Moore's law away.
And
we're living, you know, in exponential change times. And it's kind of hard, I think, for most of us to realize that, because like, if you look at, you know, exponent graphing on a log scale, it's linear, you know, mm-hmm. so that's our perception that, you know, not that much change from like, you know, last year to this year. But then when you look back 5 years, you're like, holy shit. So that's the exponential part of it, that we just absorb it, you know, in these short amount of times, you know, and we get used to it like really quick. But I think you're right. But you're going to live for another 30 years. I know you are. Like you always have great shape. You know, you're always in great shape. You know, you come from a background of an athlete, you know, in baseball. So I don't know,
baseball in our family, you either play baseball or you're excommunicated, right? So that's the way our baseball is. Yeah. It's like you sit at the kitchen table and it's like all baseball growing up and stuff like that there. So yeah, absolutely. Which was a perfect transition to being an analyst and consultant, because baseball is all stats. It's all stats. It's all numbers. You determine, it's all numbers and stuff. So it's a good logical transition to that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right. So, we dove in before really kind of properly, you know, going over like your background, you know, so we need to do that. So, I know a little bit, Ray, I've always had so much respect for you because I think you're one of the nicest, you know, analysts, you know, that, that are in our group, you know always have something kind to say, you know, to someone, and your work is diligent and you know, just do a great job both on your work side and also like in the relationships, you know, that
you
create. It's like, you know, I love that I've known you for like so many years, and you know,
I
always value
feeling is mutual. Feeling is mutual. Yeah. Mutual.
Thanks.
So what do you want to know about the background? I was born in the Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic, right? So for people that don't know, the island is so small. It's Espanol Island. We share it with Haiti, right? So really there you have options. You go to school or you play baseball, right? Pretty much. Even though it's kind of expanded a little bit, and we kind of, my family left there just because there was, you know, more of a fascist type government. Even though they were switching to a democratic, it kind of switched to democratic eventually, but the fascists were still going on where they would raid your homes and all that. And then my dad decided, hey, let's go to the U.S. Let's go to the U.S. I hear this is the land of opportunity. You work hard, you do what you have to do. And you know, he had the foresight to bring us to the U.S. And one thing that was, my Spanish is not that good. I shouldn't say it's not professionalized, because my dad refused to let us speak Spanish in the house. He said, we're going to learn English. We're in this country. You're not going to be those Dominicans that have that heavy, heavy Spanish accent, right? Type of thing, right? Which was hard, because we're there with a book. How do you say this? How do you? But it did have a major effect on there. But baseball was a big part of our life, right? For that point, it paid for I was All-State in high school. It paid for college, and then I was fortunate enough to play some pro bowl and coach pro bowl, where I won 2 amateur World Series ring, and then I coached a bunch of other teams like that. And I still do coaching. I don't know how familiar you are with the stuff that I do. So my specialties, it's two, and I don't know if this is the direction you want, Nick. No, oh, the yeah, personal for sure. stuff. No, I'm, okay, perfect. I'm
totally fascinated. Yeah,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah. So, so I, because of the baseball background, right? One of the things that I do, and I've been fortunate enough, I live in Arizona, where I ended up having a house with a big backyard with a batting cage. Was baseball is getting so specialized that it's getting very expensive for this younger community to afford that specialized. But in order for you to compete, you need that specialty training, right? So I started a free, what I call backyard baseball, backyard catching, backyard hitting. And we've been able, and it's for free. The only thing we ask is that you give back when you graduate and when you make it back and this. And it's been pretty exciting, because over the last 12 years that we've done this, right, we've had over 390 scholarships of kids that couldn't afford colleges be offered out of there. We have 17 pro players that have that come out of there. And it was just nice. One of them just sent me a picture. He's playing shortstop with the Houston Astros next to Alex Bregman. I'm going like, this is just amazing. So it's my way to give back. And then I do the mental side of it. My real specialty is I do catching, the tools of ignorance, we call it, because you got to get pretty stupid to get back there with all this gear and block a ball and actually, you know, enjoy doing it. So my specialty is catching, and then the mental side of it, where I focus on the whole thing on how to rehabilitate the mind. And now what's happening, because of that sports background, there's certain businesses that says, will you come in and teach our department or our group on the mental toughness that the pro athletes do and stuff like that. But you're normally, like I said, I do that as a way, I've been fortunate enough as a way to give back to the community. And I just ask, all I ask is you guys pave it forward, you know, give back and stuff. So it's the Motivation Foundation there. So
yeah, so it's the Motivation Foundation.
Vation, Motivation, Motivation.
Motivation. Oh my God, how cool. Foundation,
right? But what I do is I don't like making it about me. I like making it about the kids. Like we just had one, honestly, this is pretty special. This kid, training him since he was a freshman. He just sent me a picture, Nick. Almost brought a tear to my eye. Colin Braceworth, right? Ended up working, being All-State, a senior in high school, right? Grades were okay. Went to a JUCO college, played, and played a D1. He just because of his work ethics, he ended up going to medical school. And he just sent me a picture where he says, orthopedic surgeon for Mayo Clinic. He just got selected. Now, that was just literally last week, right? Wow. So I'm like, these are the type of things that, you know, I love doing. So I don't like making it about me. I like making it about the program and giving back and stuff like that there. Yeah.
God, look what your dad did.
Yeah. Look what your dad did. Yeah, think about it. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He brought you guys here, made sure, like, okay, like you get assimilated, and he raised, you know, some good kids, and that kind of fostered this kind of value, you know, to all these kids. Wow.
No.
Hats off to him. Hats off to you. That's,
and it keeps me balanced, though. You know what I mean? Because you know how our work life could get pretty hectic and stuff like this. So it keeps me balanced that, hey, there's something, things more important than just whether this router works or this architecture or something like that. Yeah.
Well, for sure. This is like the important stuff that people will always remember you by, you know, and,
absolutely.
You know, and that, you know, it's, it's to care, you know, and to give it's back true. And to like, and I think you get such a high when you help out, especially a kid, you know, who is matriculating through, whether that's junior high or high school, and right. They're trying to get into college, or you're, you know, they have some passion and you can tap into that and help them, you know, with that. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And the feedback that you get from that, like those letters.
Yeah, the letters, right, yeah.
That's like gold, you know. That's really one. Really, congratulations.
Even though the times have changed, Nick, see, me and you are old. We used to get letters. Now I get text messages or emails.
That's okay.
Which is just as powerful, right?
It's words, you know.
It's words, exactly. It's words.
Who cares about the delivery?
Wow. Exactly.
Well, that's really good. So the URL, what's the URL in case?
What I do is for every event, like we're doing one now with the Cancer Society. So I could send you the link for the, it's Rally for Life now. So what I do is I pick a certain thing and then say, okay, this is what we're going to go after. So this particular one is the Rally for Life, is affiliated with the Cancer Society. You know, and we have what we call the, they walk during the night and stuff like this, where they get donations. And I've been fortunate to help them out every year, this time of year. So it's I can send the link, but it's Rally for Life of Arizona Cancer Society right now.
Awesome. Yeah. Send the link and, you know, we'll post it up with the, you know, with the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. And thanks so much for sharing that, you know,
as well. Of course.
It's a side of you that I didn't know. And I'm sure that lots of other people just, you know, just
no thanks. And I tell you, there's certain you know, maybe there's, because I'm a Buddhist, right, maybe there's certain karma associated with it, because I'm a two-time cancer survivor, right? And I think that's where I got the hairdo, Nick, right? I think because of those kids rooting for me and my family and all that, it gave me like the ammunition and the power to get through, you know, that turmoil and stuff like that. So I'm like, you know what? They give back to me just as much as I give to them, you know?
Yeah. I had no idea, you know, you know, that your struggle, you know, with cancer and a two times, you know, survivor is huge. I would have never thought, Ray, because you are always kind of the picture of health. You always, cut.
You know, it's, I know, right? Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I learned quick, because I remember I don't drink, don't do alcohol, don't do drugs, right? Because I was an athlete. And I learned quickly, cancer doesn't discriminate on wealth, doesn't discriminate on race, doesn't discriminate on age, doesn't discriminate, you know, on whatever. So, and then my sister got the same thing. So it had to be something from the Dominican Republic or something like that might have been inherited, because we were both in top shape, you know what I mean, and stuff. That's when I'm like, oh, there's some cancer that really doesn't discriminate, right? So
that's like crazy, you know, because like you kind of think like, you know, if you're really fit and you're really taking care of yourself, that you're kind of like, you're building an immunization, you know, against these things. And it's not true. You know, not true. And so
not in all cases. Right. Exactly. Right. True.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's
anyway, now you're getting all personal with me there, Nick.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, but well, you know,
no, it's okay. It's good. Yeah. It's good. Yeah.
Well, I think, maybe there's one thing before we go through that. So like, what got you through that? You know, what?
Yeah, no, I honestly think because of the mental side of it, I literally am convinced that is a nut that hasn't been cracked in our industry yet, is the mental side of it. And I really didn't know till I was done from baseball and I ran into an old coach that we used to compete against us, right? And I'm like, I need to ask you a question, because I always saw you as this brilliant coach, but I thought you were pretty stupid to pitch, not pitch to me and pitch to the other guy behind me, because the other guy behind me was like number one in home runs, number one in batting average, number one this. Why would you walk me to pitch to him? And he goes, you don't understand, kid. You'll learn this. He goes, we looked at your batting average. Anytime it was late innings, your batting average was over 400. This other person was 100. Anytime there was a one-run ball game, a two-run ball game, your batting average was over 500. His was not even in the 100. So your mental toughness just turned on to the level that we're like, we're not messing with that. And that's when I realized, like, after that discussion, going, I need to study this more. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I love that. It's so data driven.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, very data driven and stuff. So like when I coach pro ball, you know, I remember having this man child, Nick, come into my office, 6'7". Yeah. I think he had an 8-pack. He didn't even have a 6-pack, right? Coming in my office, screaming and yelling, right? Like, why am I batting 7th in the lineup? Right. Why am I not batting 4th? Cause I'm leading the team in home runs. And I literally took the stats and say, number one, we're in first place. And as a coach, that's what I get measured by. So we're in first place. Number two, you only hit home runs for me when it doesn't matter. When the games are on the line, this is where you're batting. So instead of yelling at me, go to the mental coach that we have and start working on why is that the case, you know? So I think that fortitude of not giving up, because I was very fortunate, literally the first time, it was one of those things where you look at my chemistry, all the blood work, I had no business walking out of there, right? And I really think it was that toughness of not giving in, because there were people that had less, they had stage 3, I had stage 4, right? That didn't make it through. And I think they were in what I call, I have this thing called post-traumatic growth, right? Is you have an option when you have a major traumatic event. You have an option to do post-traumatic growth or get into the mindset of, poor me, why did I get this? You know, and all that energy is wasted on, you already have it. What good is it lingering on how you got it? You got it, deal with it. How do you, and I think that's the same thing with sports. Would that mean, okay, you messed up, let's figure out how we do. So I think that post-traumatic growth mindset is what got me through this, and it gets me through life in general there.
It's a big life lesson, that's for sure. But like, man, that's a hard way to learn that lesson, you know.
It is a hard way.
It's like, that's, you know, that's like, you know, that's got to be the hardest way, you know, to kind of learn
it
that
is
lesson.
It
you
is
know,
it's it
like
is, yeah.
You know, to like, but you can see it, like, you know, I'm not sure I would be as tough as you, you know. It's like you get hit with you know, that kind of news, and you're kind of going through that, you know, through that process, which is not an easy process. It's a really difficult, you know, process, you know, treatment protocol. And then, you know, and then you can, I can just like imagine myself, you know, just thinking, you know, having pity on myself, feeling sorry for myself, you know.
Right. Well, that's normal. That's normal.
Yeah.
Right. And the idea is, like, the way I explain it to a lot of pro athletes and business people is, if you look at, let's say, like Tom Brady, if you follow football or any of the top players, some of them have 2 or 3 coaches for different functions. If you call a plumber, right, to repair busted pipe, or electrician repair, they come in with their set of tools to fix it. Without their set of tools, they can't. It's the same thing with the mind, is that I at least use for kids, is to say, my job is to give you a set of tools that you use them when you can't, like how to breathe, you know, how to do soft focus. I mean, isn't it crazy to have to teach them how to breathe the right way? Yeah. But this is the set of tools that I say that a plumber, electrician use to get you to start building in that mindset. But the mistake too many people make is they look for a little shortcut, you know, and there isn't, you know, it isn't. It's a long process to rehabilitate the mind in that. But yeah, I try to say, here's your set of tools, like electricity, learn how to use them and practice them. Because if you don't practice them, you're not going to be successful.
It's, you know, it's interesting. Like I've been reading Peter Attia's book, I think it's called Outlive. And so he's, so he's really focused on kind of longevity, you know, and the things that, you know, that you can do today. I love this one part of his thinking is that, try to imagine like what you want to do, like when you're in your 90s, you know, do you want to like hike, you know, do you want to be able to pick up your kids, your grandchildren, you know, do you want to, you know, swim, you know, how long do you want to be able to swim? And so, he's just saying, okay, just try to like envision that time frame. And now, okay, where are you physically, you know? So like, what's your VO2 max, you know, what is your grip strength, you know, what is your lean body mass? What is your fat body mass? What's your overall body composition, you know? And, And then he'll present charts, you know, to say, okay, well, if you're like in your 50s and 60s, and if you're at these particular kind of levels, then, you know, if you don't do, if you just kind of like continue to like live without really working it, right. then your VO2 max is going to like degrade. If you get into like the 20s and, you know, like your quality of life is just going to fall off a cliff, you know? And so,
right.
so exactly. I think, so it's like, I think that's been kind of interesting to kind of just think kind of through longevity that way and thinking about, you know, what you can do now,
yeah,
and do the hard work now so that, you know, if you're fortunate enough to make it like, you know, into like your 90s, then you can have a really good kind of quality of life, you know, correct. With the people that you love, you know, and your friends. Yeah. So, you know, anyway, sorry.
No, definitely. I might have to look that up there. Yeah.
Distracted that. Yeah. It's like, I've gotten into like a lot of biomarkers as of late and, been kind of like studying, that kind of stuff. We have, heart disease in our family. And so it's like, mm-hmm. so I follow my lipids and I follow my APB, you mm-hmm. know, levels and, you know, so, you know, those, so whatever I can do to try to prevent, you know, mm-hmm. particular risk or mitigate particular risk, I kind of focus on that.
Smart move. You know, smart move.
Try anyway.
I always say, well, people do that, always work on the mindset too, meaning including in there the meditation or the relaxation to slow down the mind as you do those. Because I think, like I said, above the shoulders is where people didn't work. Because like I told you, I just see some of these people, specimen of a body. And, mm. and in sports, we call them mental midgets, right? One little adversity messes them up, you know, adversity or something like that, right?
So yeah.
working above the shoulders just as much, yeah.
All right, well, that's, I need some tools to work on that.
There you go, right. I'll get you a little tool set. We'll start with the breathing, right? We'll start with the breathing part, right?
Breathing is good. I like breathing.
Yes.
All right. So, hey, well, let's spend a little bit more time, like, you know, kind of talking about the thing that we share, you know, around the industry. Sure. So, mm-hmm. So we spent some time talking about the AI, you know, part of things. And have you thought about, you know, how like infrastructure will change, you know, over the next couple of years? So like, I think maybe how we can kind of bridge a gap between kind of the telecom industry and kind of the whole AI kind of infrastructure and networking piece is that from what I've kind of gleaned is that a lot of the folks in the telecom industry are really looking for kind of AI to really help on their OPEX, you know, reduction and even their CAPEX reduction. So they're looking at it as a major kind of automation, efficiency, efficacy, you know, play. I'm not sure if you're, you know, if you've been focused on that, you know, or if, you know, an area that you've been thinking about.
Yeah, that is an area that I've been talking to quite a few about, quite a bit, actually, from people in Europe and in the U.S. It's a hot topic, right? So, yes, the first part is the low-hanging fruits are initially about what I call cost optimization, right? To say, you know, if we look at everything from how we optimize the network today, could we leverage AI to help us optimize it more efficiently? Could we use AI to handle our traffic management more effectively? Because some of these things are at a volume that is difficult to try to do. Even how we handle customer service, right? Could we use leverage AI to do that? But there's a certain point, though, that you say, how much lower could we go, right? Mm. So not all the discussions are just related to cost optimization, right? They start that way, but then others, when they start seeing a little bit of the power of AI, they're like, is there a revenue opportunity there for me or not, right? Mm. And those are some of the debates that are going on now. Like, is there a way for me, for enterprise customers that are concerned about data sovereignty, for instance, right? Could I offer some inference in AI that the data is controlled in a certain local area? So there's little pockets of that. Is there an opportunity to offer some knowledge base, leverage AI as a service or some chat box? So there are some looking to see, is there a revenue play there at all for me? Or do we just let the web scalers? Right now, you know, you see Microsoft leading the charge for enterprise going to them with workloads just because, you know, they have the open AI. So if you're an enterprise, you're like, well, maybe I should look there. But there are little pockets I see of certain enterprises going, I don't know if I'm able to even do that. I need to figure out some alternative because of the data sovereignty and some of the other security concerns or certain latency issues that are required based on their requirement. But some of the use cases being discussed, Nick, are pretty exciting. You know, like one was looking at this thing saying we're getting too many fiber cuts in some of these regions. So they're like, hey, we could download the construction thing from the city, where that when they're going to be digging, what dates, and just have some trucks nearby there. To do that as a human would be impossible. Now they've got this big data and they're doing that and they reduce the time. They can't reduce the number of fiber cuts because they're going to cut anyway, but at least the time that to repair is reduced tremendously. So time to remediation, you see stuff like that, which is pretty exciting with the telecom there. So that's kind of like the two angles that I see initially.
Yeah, well, those are really important because, like, you know, they've spent so much money on the kind of 5G spectrum, and you know, and so trying to get a return on that, you know, has been challenging. Yeah. And so if there are ways in which, you know, that they can, you know, further kind of reduce OpEx, you know, and make the service better, you know, then that's a beautiful thing. But I tell you though, it's tough though in the telecom space. Well, I don't know. You tell me, but. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because, like, when we think about the pandemic and how, you know, obviously the major shift towards remote work, the real winners, in my view, really were, like, you know, the telecom providers. You know, it's like, you know, they provided the infrastructure, you know, that we can all work remotely, but they weren't celebrated. Who was celebrated was Amazon and Google and Microsoft, you know? Yeah. Well, clearly, yeah. And, you know, and Zoom. And they're deserving, you know, as well, you know, but really, I don't think the telecom providers got any love.
You know, I agree. I actually have to tell you, I actually sent an email, I think it was Time, that had either Zoom or somebody saying, like, person of the year, like, during the pandemic. Oh. And I sent the email, do you know what a cloud is? A cloud is a network. It requires servers. It requires infrastructure. So you're thanking the wrong people, I said, because of connectivity, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you're right. I think people in our industry, right, have realized the importance of communications and all that for years, right? But during the pandemic, I think Verizon saw over 21 minutes per day increase per subscriber, people just communicating to try to stay in touch per day. I mean, that's a big number, right? That happens but you're right. Telecom, because of more of their reservations and stuff, should have been out there saying, this is happening because of us, right? And they're not doing a good job of even, like, if we look at the cloud, right? If you have a bad cloud experience, right, from that perspective, you're going to call Google, is it bad? And people forget, if that underlying infrastructure, the underlay is bad, you're going to have a bad cloud experience, right?
You're going to have a bad.
And they haven't done enough of a good job of saying, in the pandemic, we've been the platform of innovation. And that's what I've been trying to convince them to say. Look at yourself as the platform for innovation, that you're creating this layer to allow the Zooms and the others to create that living innovation, because it solved the mental issue. It solved the communications issue. It was a telecom was vital to, I mean, I think about retail businesses, isn't it? How they had to go in and turn into this area with ordering remote, you know, without telecom and connections, business continuity would have been almost disastrous in that piece. So I totally agree 100% that they should have done a better job of saying, this is why this continued to work, that we prepared for this, right? I mean, you think about when I used to build networks, Nick, I used to, once it was at 42% utilization, I automatically would have a backup link. That's the way, why? Because we don't lose our jobs that way, right?
Yeah.
Because they created this overcapacity in the network, we were able to address the pandemic like we've been prepared for this. We've been prepared for this.
It's really, they kept the economy, the global economy going, you know, and, it's like really it's one group that really deserves, you know, a lot of really accolades and celebration, you know, and so they've been, but for one reason or the other, you know, they didn't get it, you know, and it's like, you know, if we look at kind of like how the telecom industry has evolved and with relation to the cloud market. So this is like really from 2007, you know, on, so, you know, 15 years, you know, something like that, you know, it's like crazy. Microsoft has a market cap over $3 trillion right now. You know, it's like, like the cloud providers are, pretty close to like what, like, you know, almost like 10 times, like maybe seven times, you know, bigger, you know, than the telecom, you know, providers. And I get, you know, they, I think they lost a major kind of opportunity there, or they weren't able to partner in the right ways. We'll see if Cloud Edge, you know, provides any, you know, realignment of that and rethinking, you know, of that, you know, where you mentioned kind of latency, where latency is really important, where you want to be able to do processing where the data is. And so a much more distributed cloud infrastructure, you know, becomes required, you know, in those areas. And maybe that's an area where they can kind of reemerge, you know, and grow their businesses.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been tough for them for a while, right? Like if you mention 5G, initially they thought they were going to get a premium in the ARPU for consumer. And and some, there were some countries, I remember this one person in the UK that called me saying, look, we're getting a 15% premium on the ARPU. And he started laughing at me. I said, wait till another competitor enters your market and you'll see. 3 months later, they were back to the same ARPU as 4G. Yeah. So there hasn't been that killer app and there hasn't been the proper business case, like you said, in these areas for that, where in many cases I talk to them, why are you deploying 5G? Well, because my competition's deploying it. Well, what's your business case? We really don't have a good monetization side of that. It's more to protect our existing customer base, right? So you think about all that investment, billions invested just to protect the customer base. Now, they have been looking at diversifying to certain verticals like private 5G and trying to look to say, how do we expand from this? But it's not taking at the rate. Yeah, you've got some private 5G expansion, but not at the rate that I think they initially expected, at least from the mobile side of it there. So, and then if you look at the interesting, traffic still continues to go up, you know, last year, I think it was, I don't know what it is this year, but it was like 24% year over year growth in traffic. And yet people, you know, on the phones, I think on the phones still want to pay the same as 4G, right? So,
I know. It's like, they don't see really, kind of, well, the apps really haven't demanded a lot more bandwidth, you know, to kind of like drive on your phones anyway, you know. But I think, you know, it's like even on the private, you know, private 5G space, like I think the telecom industry, they always fall into like a kind of an echo chamber in thinking, you know, meaning that they talk to themselves a lot, you know, and they don't bring a lot of the consumer, you know, the real consumer, like the end consumer, you know, thinking and requirements into that. So they'll go after like use cases like OT and IT integration, like, you know, manufacturing, which are good use cases, you know, for 5G, for private 5G, but they're limited, you know, they're kind of like, they're siloed. And there really hasn't been a really good play for a kind of a general purpose like 5G, like a Wi-Fi, you know, has been, you know. And so you have Wi-Fi that continues to like, you know, march on, and you have 5G you know, continues to move on as well. But yeah, they haven't, you know, they haven't been able to kind of figure out that kind of more a general purpose horizontal play there, you know, for them. And you would think that maybe there is a the combination of kind of, you know, processing data closer to where it resides or where the source of it, you know, really is, whether that you're using 5G there or not, you know, what have you, you know, processing, you know, closer, You know, those might be more general purpose, you know, kind of use cases. And I know there are groups that are working on it. I'm not sure if they have.
Yeah, there's some groups working on that right now, and they're trying to look a lot of those groups to say, we have all this valuable data, you know, could we find some ways of monetizing some of that using some type of AI thing? But I think one thing that I'm tracking closely to see how well it works is this whole concept, Nick, regarding NetCo and tower code and that areas. Yeah. And the whole concept is that, and there's different papers, Deloitte and Touche and others have wrote some good papers that I could say, they did a good job of explaining to say, you've got this massive infrastructure. Some have regulatory issues, right? So sometimes they're risk averse because they have to be. Like if you look at, yeah, AT&T being down, right? You know, you had first responders and all these people down. If I was talking to someone who knows, who works in the business, saying, what is it going to be in fines for AT&T and SLA violation? He goes, I'm estimating $1 billion, right? Wow. Think about it, right?
That's
Google
huge.
Snips down. They don't have those regulatory concerns and stuff like that. So there's the discussion about disaggregating the telco so they can move. And there's been some, I guess, glimmers of success. So if you look at the tower companies, right, they've kind of disaggregated and they have almost, in some cases, between 6 to 11 times higher market evaluation. That, and they have three to seven percent, in some cases, even double digits higher margin than a telco. So the idea is to disaggregate and create a NetCo, you know, a SoftCo and a TowerCo so that they could, now it's a long-term, you see Telecom Italia kind of trying to do that. And there's a few others in Asia to see, are we able to move at a faster pace? Are we able to diversify? Because if you look at traditionally in the telco, because of all this layering minimum, it takes between 16 to 18 months to launch a new product. That's at minimum.
Wow.
Yeah. That's at minimum. That's just, by the time you launch it, you've missed all, especially now at the pace we're moving with technology, right? No. So that part needs to move at a much faster pace. So this disaggregation is something that I'm paying attention to, the economic side of it right now.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So, because like the paces, we talked about that in the very early part of the podcast, like, The rate of change is not slowing down. It's not going to slow down.
No.
You know, and so they're hampered by regulation, which makes sense. I haven't really kind of processed that and put that into account, you know. And so if they can look at other organizational models, you know, that will free them up to be able to move faster, then that's the right thing to do. So, I'll keep an eye on Telecom Italia, you know, and kind of like the use case, you know, for that disaggregation and kind of like see how that's going. No, that's really good. So we have, so you're going to be doing a panel. I don't know. We're calling it the AI Networking Summit, you know, on segment routing, right? You know, so it's like, so it's okay. How do we, so almost like, what is the, As AI does come into the protocols, as we mentioned before, into the protocol stack. So can we do routing differently? You know, like right now we kind of base routing on, you know, lowest cost, you know, and we run shortest path first or BGP, you know, and we run the Dijkstra model and then we go hop by hop. You know, with AI, can we actually make that much more interesting? You know, can we do a posture assessment? You know, security posture, you know, assessment, you know, of a particular route. Can we look at, you know, not just the what that cost is, but a real dollar cost? What is the latency associated with that? What is the overall delay and the jitter associated, you know, maybe with that link? And how does that maybe get presented back up to an application? So I'm wondering, you know, on those kinds of, you know, things, I'm hoping that's the kind of discussion that you'll have on that panel.
It's a hot topic, absolutely. And you mentioned segment routing. That's one that, you know, I helped develop the initial use cases wore that maybe five or six years ago. I could send you that you could distribute to the audience. It's a little technical, but one of the things that was getting frustrating for me was all this terms on technology. I'm like, what are the use cases? Right? Yeah. What are the use cases? So in here, so I could send that as an area. But I think you're right, because you mentioned, let's say, security, you mentioned AI. I always say security is as strong as your weakest link, number one, right?
Yeah.
And the anomaly detection at the volume that we're getting now, in many cases, security has become, or the bad side of security is somewhat professionalized. You've got things like black clouds that you can do massive DDoS attack by just propagating to a cloud verse. So that volume is starting, and it's difficult to keep up. And I think there's opportunities for AI to leverage, you know, an end-to-end security, because you could have security in one strong part of the company, but if you've got some weak links, it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter, right? And I think this is where I'm excited about potentially how AI can leverage some of those anomaly detections and be able to look at, you know, bad actors in the system at a volume that, you know, is difficult for the existing platforms that we have to keep in that case there. Yeah. And then the simplification of the architectures, because you touched on early on, is we can't keep building networks the same way we have in the past. Things are changing too rapidly. We need to revisit how the way we design networks, how we build architectures, how we layer them, and is there a more efficient way to do this? So I think it's an opportunity for telcos and enterprise to say, do we have to do it this way? You know, do we have to question this way and stuff like that? Because I always say engineering school kind of, it taught me that there were seven layers on the OSI model, Nick. And I always say, man, engineering school was wrong when I got into the consulting world. There's politics and religion being 8 and 9 layer, right? Yeah. The 8th and 9th layer. But then there's a 10th layer called economics, right? Because I used to love ATM. Right. You can slice and dice. Yeah. People talking about triple play. I'm like, I did that back in the 90s, triple play. But when it costs you $1,200 for a NIC card versus $69 from a, let's say, a 3Com at 100, you know, it's just.
Or fries.
So yeah, right. So I think we're at a standpoint that we have to almost revisit to say, we've got this powerful capability. Do we need to continue building networks and environments the same way we are today? Is there more? Yeah. And I think if you look at the cloud providers, right, we almost need to change that mindset in the enterprise and in the service provider, because with cloud providers, if it's not simple, if it's not automated, if it doesn't have complete visibility, they don't let it into their network or to their environment.
That's very true. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's just, and it works, because you look at their OPEX cost to manage a network versus a traditional tier one. They don't have that mindset from that point of view. Right. So I think you're seeing the way people build networks are trying to revisit now. Can we leverage AI to do it more better? We're seeing pockets of it, like with AI and remediation and optimization, but we need to see it at a bigger scale now.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's such an important point. I think there's the reimagining of every part of the infrastructure. So it's whether it's in the data center, whether it's in the wide area network, how we're connecting into different type of cloud providers. What's the security infrastructure that, you know, that we've built, you know, as well, like the plethora of tools that are out there on the security side of things. I think that needs to really be rethought as well. And but there is a lot of that discussion happening, the whole reimagining of what this infrastructure should look like. We're nowhere near, like, what are the design patterns, you know, for this yet. And I think that's, you know, if we start presenting, proposing design patterns, we're not really having the full discussion and looking to really what is the real set of problems that we're trying to solve. So I'm kind of hopeful that, you know, that this year is kind of like a data gathering, try to understand, absorb a lot of this, you know, these new possibilities, you know, and start to, like, explore, you know, how do we want to reimagine these parts of the infrastructure? And then 2025 and 2026 is, I think, starting, like, the industry proposing products and design patterns. But there is going to be like a beginning, you know, I think like at, starting at the AI networking summit, you know, in May, that I think is going to be the start of like some products that would be traditionally in the enterprise space that are being rebuilt from the ground up with AI. So Juniper started that process, I think, with the AI native networking initiative they have, like based upon a Mist. There's a whole line of products that are behind that. So I think this year we're going to see a plethora of new products like coming into the marketplace that are really geared towards, and you had mentioned some of those before, the operational side of this equation, you know, of infrastructure. So how do you eliminate the toil? How do you really provide automation that you can trust, you know, into this so that you can actually bring that operational cost, maybe not so much down, but keep it steady while you're actually growing.
Steady. Because, right.
Yeah, there are like so many open recs for security engineers and network engineers that we're never, ever going to fill, you know? So like, I think that's kind of a fool's errand to try to like, you know, try to fill all those recs, you know? So you really, I think, you know, now it's really around how do you automate and how do you kind of bring the power of AI to that? And I think the vendor community is leading, that they have to lead, you know, it's like, this is an area where like, you know, the consumer, you know, they consume products, they can provide input, you know, on the design and their requirements, they don't design product. And so if I even think about like at the owner community, for the last 10 years, it was very much a loud consumer voice around requirements and what's needed. That has flipped totally towards the end of last year, now into this year. They want to hear from the vendor community. All right, how do we think about this? What are our options? You know, how does this fit into like, you know, what we're currently doing? You know, I'm being asked to like, you know, to support, you know, these AI workloads. I don't even know how to start, you know, with that. So, so I think that's, you know, that's a real pivot that happened in the industry this year. And so I think, you know, the bottom line is that we're in for like we have been in an exciting period. I think it's only going to accelerate, you know, during the next, you know, at least 18, 24 month timeframe. So,
yeah, I'm super excited where this is going.
Yeah, me too. Well, Ray, I think that might be a good place to end, unless like you have anything else that you want to like add.
No, I mean, I think one thing maybe to add is as people, because of those OSI layers I told you about, you know, politics, religion, but economics, is that's one thing, because you ask about, hey, what are some of the exciting things, is being able, we're working on, and I think as people transition, is make sure you're just not doing, because a lot of the architectures are built based on performance and latency, not on economics. So working with a few large carriers and having true real-time cost in real time, right, of any part of their network, so that when they have a baseline of what, when you bring in automation AI, you can see, is the needle moving this way or the needle moving that way? So having quite a bit of conversations on, they're good at having top line expense and OpEx and stuff like that, CapEx, but they don't know it to the micro level. And when you don't know it to the micro level, it's difficult for you to optimize your existing environment. So working with a few on having that visibility that will also forecast where these expenses are going based on using AI, right? Machine learning, right? So that part is pretty exciting, working with some of those. So as some of those use cases get further, I can talk to you more about it there. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that's a great, great end point, you know, economics and end to end, being able to kind of like actually measure that, you know, as it happens. That's it's something we don't have. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for taking the time. You know, it's really great to hang out with you as always. It's thanks for sharing so much as well. Yeah, you know, I'm really just, you know, I always admired you. I admire you even more now with like all that work that you've been doing, like in your community.
Oh, thank you.
I got a lot of respect for your dad. You know, it's like, you know, you did a great job. All right.
Good.
Thanks, Ray.
Good. Thank you. Hey, thank you.
It's
everyone.
An
honor to be here. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Awesome. Thank you.
Cheers.